completing your planned tactics, and it is still not producing. You could have created an awesome plan, but you'll never know unless you actually implement it. However, if you are executing at a high level, and the results you want are not coming, then it's time to go back and adjust the plan. Physics tells us that for every action, there is a reaction. So the good news is that every time you execute, you produce something. It may not be what you expected, but something will happen. This something is market feedback, and it's impossible to effectively adjust your plan without it. Without knowing what tactics you executed, any changes you make will be based purely on guesswork. Truth is the only safe ground to stand on. Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Weekly Scorecard. The best way to measure your execution is to work from a weekly plan based upon your 12-week plan and evaluate the percentage of tactics completed. For the 12-week year, we've developed a tool called the Weekly Scorecard. If you've followed the process thus far, you understand that the weekly plan represents the critical activities that you need to accomplish each week to achieve your overall goals. The weekly scorecard then provides an objective measure of how well you executed your weekly plan. With the weekly scorecard, you measure execution, not results. You score yourself on the percentage of activities you complete each week. We urge you to strive for excellence, not perfection. We have found that if you successfully complete 85% of the activities in your weekly plan, then you will most likely achieve your objectives. Remember that your plan contains the top priorities that will add the most value and have the greatest impact. In other words, you only need to be 85% effective on the top priorities to achieve excellence. A word of caution. Scorekeeping is not for the faint of heart. There will be times when you don't execute well and score poorly. People often drop out when they reach this point because they lack the courage to face the reality of their actions. Instead of scoring their performance, they distract themselves with other things that seem important in the moment. With the 12-week year, there is nowhere to hide. It shines a light on where you are performing and where you are not. All of us, from time to time, will struggle to execute. The 12-week year system forces you to confront your lack of execution, and it's uncomfortable, but it is the very thing that is required if you're going to perform at your best. We call this discomfort productive tension. Productive tension is the uncomfortable feeling you get when you're not doing the things that you know you need to do. Our natural inclination when confronted with discomfort is to resolve it. In an effort to do this, people generally go one of two ways. The easy way out is to simply stop using the system and turn off the light that is shining on your performance breakdowns. Typically, this takes the form of passive resistance, and you put off scoring your week and tell yourself that you'll get to it later, but later never comes. The other way is to use productive tension as a catalyst for change. Instead of responding to the discomfort by bailing out, high achievers use the tension as an impetus to move forward. If you decide that quitting is not an option, then the discomfort of productive tension will eventually compel you to take action on your tactics. This encourages you to move forward by executing your plan. Even with a weekly score of 65 to 70%, you will do well if you stay in the game. You won't accomplish what you are capable of, but you will do well. It's important to remember that the process is not about being perfect, but rather about getting better and better. Measurement drives the process. Effective scorekeeping is essential if you want to execute well and perform at your best. Take time to establish a set of key measures that include lead and lag indicators, and most importantly, be sure to score your execution. Have the courage to measure your performance. Chapter 7. Intentionality. Everything you want to accomplish in life requires an investment of your time, So when you want to improve your results, you must face the fact that your supply of time is completely inelastic and perishable. Even in this era of rapid innovation and technological advancement, time, more than any other resource, still limits our results. When we ask our clients what keeps them from achieving more, most often we hear that it's a lack of time, and yet time is the most squandered of all personal resources. A study conducted a few years ago by Salary.com found that the average person wastes nearly 2 hours of every working day. The importance of yes and no. The reality is that if you are not purposeful about how you spend your time, then you leave your results to chance. While it's true that we control our actions and not our outcomes, our results are created by our actions. It stands to reason that the actions we choose to take throughout our day ultimately determine our destiny. In spite of the priceless value of time, many people engage each day on its own terms. In other words, they satisfy the various demands of the day as they are presented, spending whatever time is needed to respond without giving much thought as to the relative value of the activity. This is a reactive approach in which the day is controlling you and prevents you from performing at your best. To realize your potential, you must learn to be more mindful about how you spend your time. Living with clear intention goes against the powerful natural tendency to be reactive because it requires you to organize your life around your priorities and consciously choose those activities that align with your goals and vision. When you spend your time with intention, you know when to say yes and when to say no. You are probably aware when you are procrastinating or engaging in low-level activity to avoid tackling a less comfortable high-payoff activity. When you use your time intentionally, you waste less of it and spend more of it on your high-value actions. But to do this, you must be willing to be disciplined and structure your days and weeks. The best way to do this is to use your 12-week plan to drive your activity, so that in the end, you set your goals for the day instead of letting the day direct you. Intentionality is your secret weapon in your war on mediocrity. It's not enough to be busy. So are the ants. The question is, what are we busy about? Henry David Thoreau. Blocking your time. Benjamin Franklin said, "If we take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves." That is wise counsel. The challenge in applying this wisdom is that throughout the day, things come up, things that you didn't anticipate that will eat up your valuable minutes. Trying to reduce these interruptions usually doesn't work well, and it can be more difficult than just dealing with them. In our opinion, the key to successful time use, intentional time use, is not trying to eliminate these unplanned interruptions, but instead to block out regular time each week dedicated to your strategically important tasks. We call this performance time, and find that it is the best approach to effectively allocating time that we have ever encountered. It utilizes a simple time-blocking system to regain control of your day and maximize your effectiveness. There are three primary components of performance time: strategic blocks, buffer blocks, and breakout blocks. Strategic blocks. A strategic block is a 3-hour block of uninterrupted time that is scheduled into each week. During this block, you accept no phone calls, no faxes, no emails, no visitors, no anything. Instead, you focus all your energy on your pre-planned tasks, your strategic and money-making activities. Strategic blocks concentrate your intellect and creativity to produce breakthrough results. You will likely be astounded by the quantity and quality of the work you produce. For most people, one strategic block per week is sufficient. Buffer blocks. Buffer blocks are designed to deal with all of the unplanned and low-value activities, like most email and voicemail, that arise throughout a typical day. Almost nothing is more unproductive and frustrating than dealing with constant interruptions, yet we've all had days when unplanned items dominated our time. For some, one 30-minute buffer block a day is sufficient, while for others, two separate one-hour blocks may be necessary. The power of buffer blocks comes from grouping together activities that tend to be unproductive so that you can increase your efficiency in dealing with them and take greater control over the rest of your day. Breakout blocks. One of the key factors contributing to performance plateaus is the absence of free time. Very often, entrepreneurs and professionals get caught up in working longer and harder, but this approach kills your energy and enthusiasm. To achieve greater results, what's often necessary is not actually working more hours, but rather taking some time away from work. It's not by chance that people often quote the famous proverb, "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy." When we don't take time off from work, we can lose our creative edge. An effective breakout block is at least 3 hours long and spent on things other than work. It is time scheduled away from your business during normal business hours that you will use to refresh and reinvigorate your mind so that when you return to work, you can engage with more focus and energy. If you are not in control of your time, you are not in control of your results. Performance time applies to more than just strategic, buffer, and breakout blocks. The more you can create routine in your days and weeks, the more effective your execution will be. The best way to accomplish this is to create a picture of an ideal week. The concept of an ideal week is to plan on paper all the critical tasks that occur in a typical week and organize them so you can be most productive. If you can't fit all the things you do on paper, there's no way you'll get them done in reality, so the exercise of strategically planning your week will cause you to make some hard choices about how you use your time. As you create your ideal week, it helps to schedule routine tasks at the same time, on the same day each week if possible. Consider when you tend to be at your best. Are you a morning person, or are you better in the afternoon or evening? Schedule your most important activities during your prime time. We will walk you through how to create your model week in Chapter 17. For many of our clients, performance time has had an immediate impact on results. Just gaining control over a few hours each week often has a dramatic effect. Learn to use your time with greater intention, and you will not only be more effective, but you will also feel a greater sense of control, less stress, and increased confidence. Chapter 8. Accountability as Ownership. Accountability is perhaps the most misunderstood concept in business and life. Most people equate it with bad behavior, poor performance, and negative consequences. As an example, when an athlete does something in violation of the league's conduct policy, the commissioner will state publicly that the league will hold this athlete accountable and then issues a fine or suspension. It's no wonder that most people want nothing to do with accountability. Our last free act, after which no further free acts are possible, is to deny that we are free. Peter Kestenbaum. People often talk about holding others accountable, especially in business situations. Often, you'll hear management say something like, "We need to do a better job of holding people accountable." I've even heard individuals who truly desire to perform better say, "I just need someone to hold me accountable." These types of statements reflect the mistaken notion that accountability is something that can and must be imposed. That's not accountability, that's consequences. In fact, it is impossible to hold someone else accountable. I like to joke that you can hold a baby and you can hold a bag of groceries, but you can't hold someone accountable. Accountability is not consequences, but ownership. It is a character trait, a life stance, a willingness to own your actions and results regardless of the circumstances. In the book, Freedom and Accountability at Work, Applying Philosophic Insight to the Real World, the authors Peter Kestenbaum and Peter Block discuss accountability as follows. We have a small way of thinking about accountability. We think that people want to escape from being accountable. We believe that accountability is something that must be imposed. We have to hold people accountable, and we devise reward and punishment schemes to do this. These beliefs are so dominant in our culture that they are difficult to question. Yet they are the very beliefs that keep us from experiencing what we long for. The very nature of accountability rests in the understanding that each and every one of us has freedom of choice. It is this freedom of choice that is the foundation of accountability. Accountability is the realization that you always have choice, that, in fact, there are no have-tos in life. Have-tos are those things we hate to do, but do anyway because we have to. The fact is that there are no have-tos. Everything we do in life is a choice. Even in an environment where there are requirements of you, you still have choice. But there is a big difference when you approach something as a choose-to versus a have-to. When something is a have-to, it's a burden, it's cumbersome, and at best, you meet the minimum standards. However, the realization that you ultimately have choice creates a very different scenario. When you choose to do something, you are able to tap your resources and give your best. It is a much more empowering stance. Ultimately, you choose your actions, your results, your consequences. Accountability is not consequences, it's ownership. All of us have a tendency to look outside of ourselves for things to change and improve. We are waiting for the economy to pick up, for the housing market to turn around, or for our company to come up with a new product, more competitive pricing, or better advertising. It's easy to become a victim to outside circumstances, spending time and energy hoping and imagining what our lives would be like if the world around us were different, believing that these are the keys to improving our results. The truth is, you don't control any of these things. The only things you control are your thinking and your actions. But those are enough if, and that's a big if, you are willing to own them. Don't get the wrong impression that somehow accountability, as we've described it here, is passive. It's quite the contrary. True accountability actively confronts the truth. It confronts with freedom of choice and the consequences of those choices. In this way, accountability is extremely empowering, but you must be willing to confront reality and the truth of your situation. How you view accountability and to what degree you embrace it affects everything you do, from your relationships to your ability to execute effectively. When you understand that true accountability is about choice and taking ownership of your choices, everything changes. You move from resistance to empowerment, from limits to possibilities, and from mediocrity to greatness. At the end of the day, the only accountability that truly exists is self-accountability. The only person who can hold you accountable for anything is you. And to be successful, you must develop the mental honesty and courage to own your thinking, actions, and results. Chapter 9. Interest versus Commitment. Commitments are a powerful part of the 12-week year. An ability to make and keep commitments improves results, builds trust, and fosters high-performance teams. Yet, many of us avoid making commitments, and worse yet, we often break them when the going gets tough. To be truly great at what we do, we have to become better at keeping our promises. Commitment is an act, not a word. Jean-Paul Sartre. There is an old anecdote about commitments involving a chicken and a pig at breakfast time. The chicken has contributed the egg and is therefore merely interested in the breakfast. The pig, however, contributes the bacon and is thus completely committed. It's a humorous story, but ultimately paints a negative picture of commitment. In reality, kept commitments benefit both parties involved by improving relationships, strengthening integrity, and building self-confidence. Commitments are powerful and oftentimes life-changing. I'm sure you can recall a time when you were determined to accomplish something meaningful and you were willing to do whatever it took to make it happen. One of the most powerful commitments that I have ever made was to my father. It was the summer after my first year of college, and I remember the conversation like it was yesterday. The two of us were working in the garden, talking about my freshman year. It quickly became apparent to me during that conversation that my father and I had different perspectives on the purpose of college. The issue was my grades. I was on the dean's list, but unfortunately for me, the dean kept two lists, and I was on the one for academic probation. My father explained that he was unwilling to continue helping with tuition unless my results improved. I felt terrible and made a commitment that day to my father and myself. I promised him that when I went back to school in the fall, I would get all A's. He challenged me to meet my commitment by adding to the stakes. If I did get all A's, he would give me $500. If I didn't, I would owe him $500. When I went back to school that fall, I pulled out all the stops. I went to class, took notes and lectures, read the text, and did the homework. I also stopped socializing as much as I had during my first year. In the end, I got the grades, straight A's. The $500 is long gone, but that commitment changed my life. I started showing up on the real dean's list, and I never went back. My story is a great example of commitment. A commitment is a personal promise. Keeping your promises to others builds trust and strong relationships, and keeping promises to yourself builds character, esteem, and success. Unless commitment is made, there are only promises and hopes, but no plans. Peter Drucker. A definition of commitment that I like is the state of being bound emotionally or intellectually to a course of action. American Heritage Dictionary, 4th edition. From this perspective, a commitment is a conscious choice to act in order to create a desired result. We all know intuitively that an ability to keep commitments is fundamental to effective execution and high performance. But many of us fall short of our commitments on a regular basis. It seems that when things get difficult, we find reasons why we can't keep our promises and we shift our focus to other activities. Often our interest wanes when things get tough. It is important to understand that there is a difference between interest and commitment. When you're interested in doing something, you do it only when circumstances permit. But when you're committed to something, you accept no excuses, only results. When we commit to something, we do things that we would not ordinarily do. The question of if goes away, and the only question you ask is how. Commitment is powerful, but there are times when all of us struggle to commit. Here are the four keys to successful commitments. 1. Strong desire. In order to fully commit to something, you need a clear and personally compelling reason. Without a strong desire, you will struggle when the implementation gets difficult. But with a compelling desire, seemingly insurmountable obstacles are seen as challenges to be met. The desired end result needs to be meaningful enough to get you through the hard times and keep you on track. 2. Keystone actions. Once you have an intense desire to accomplish something, then you need to identify the core actions that will produce the results you're after. In today's world, many of us have become spectators rather than participants. We must remember that it's what we do that counts. In most endeavors, there are often many activities that help you accomplish your goal. However, there are usually only a few core activities that account for the majority of the results, and in some cases, there are only one or two keystone actions that ultimately produce the result. It is critical that you identify these keystones and focus on them. 3. Count the costs. Commitments require sacrifice. In any effort, there are benefits and costs. Too often, we claim to commit to something without considering the costs, the hardships that will have to be overcome to accomplish your desire. Costs can include time, money, risk, uncertainty, loss of comfort, and so on. Identifying the costs before you commit allows you to consciously choose whether you are willing to pay the price of your commitment. When you face any of these costs, it is extremely helpful to recognize that you anticipated them and decided that reaching your goal was worth it. 4. Act on commitments, not feelings. There will be times when you won't feel like doing the critical activities. We've all been there. Getting out of bed at 5:30 a.m. to jog in the winter cold can be daunting, especially when you're in a toasty warm bed. It is during these times that you will need to learn to act on your commitments instead of your feelings. If you don't, you will never build any momentum and will get stuck continually restarting or, as is so often the case, giving up. Learning to do the things you need to do, regardless of how you feel, is a core discipline for success. Many times commitments are made more arduous by the time frame for which they are made. It is difficult to commit to anything for a lifetime. Even keeping a promise for an entire year can be challenging. With the 12-week year, you are not asked to make lifetime or even annual commitments, but rather 12-week commitments. It is much more feasible to establish and keep a commitment for 12 weeks than to keep it for 12 months. At the end of the 12 weeks, you reassess your commitments and begin again. Our commitments ultimately shape our lives. They support sound marriages, create lasting relationships, drive our results, and help build our character. There is just something incredibly empowering about knowing if you say you're going to do something that you can count on yourself, that you don't need to hedge your bets. Chapter 10. Greatness in the Moment. They say that with technology, the world is now smaller. I think it's also moving faster. Life seems to be getting busier and speeding up. Don't get me wrong, technology is great. My phone now has way more computing capability and usefulness than the first laptop I purchased in 1988 for about $6,000. The downside is that we now have very little downtime in our day. It used to be that on the drive to and from work, you could ramp up and ramp down. But now, most people spend that time on the phone. The natural margin in our day is disappearing, but we still need time to mentally relax. In this hurried new world, multitasking has become a highly valued skill. The belief is that in order to get the most out of my day, I need to be fully scheduled, fully committed, and constantly on the run. The fear is that I might miss out on something good, so I hurry from one meeting or event to the next, squeezing in a phone call or two in between. When I'm in meetings, I'm constantly checking my email and messages because I don't want to miss anything. And with texting, I can carry on two or three conversations at one time. Not many people would admit that this is the way they operate, but just look around you. This is the way most people behave. In our efforts not to miss anything, we unwittingly miss everything. Our attention is spread over various subjects and conversations, and when we strive to do so much, we actually apply very little of ourselves to any individual activity. We feel stressed out, burned out, exhausted, frustrated, and disconnected. In the end, this approach practically guarantees that we will be mediocre, by virtue of the fact that nothing gets our full attention, not the important projects, not the important conversations, and not the important people. Most people are running so fast they miss life. They are in one place physically and another place mentally. You are most effective when you are mentally where you are physically, when you are present in the moment. Athletes call it playing in the zone. When you're present in the moment, your thinking is clear and focused, decisions come easily, and you move through tasks almost effortlessly. When you are in the moment, you live with grace and ease. When you are totally present in the moment, when you connect with the now, life is more enjoyable. The best thing about the future is that it comes one day at a time. Abraham Lincoln. You can't change the past or act in the future. The current moment, the eternal right now, is all you have. Right now, you can affect what happens to you for the rest of your life. The future is created now. Our dreams are achieved in the moment. My wife Judy and I are both cancer survivors. For those of you who have dealt with cancer, either yourself or with a family member, you know firsthand how quickly you gain an appreciation for the present moment. The fact is that life happens in the moment. Life is lived in the moment. And ultimately, greatness is created in the moment. Performing in the moment. Like many people around the world, every couple of years I tune in to the Olympic Games to watch amazing athletes do incredible things. A few years back, as I watched the events, the following thought crossed my mind. When does a champion become great? The obvious answer seemed to be when the individual achieves a high level of performance, such as winning a gold medal. But as I considered my own question further, I came to the conclusion that greatness is not achieved when the result is reached, but rather long before that, when an individual chooses to do the things that he knows he needs to do. Let's stick with the Olympic athlete as an example. The athlete becomes great not when she breaks a world record and wins a medal. That's when the world recognizes her, but in reality, the event is just the evidence of her greatness. The athlete achieved greatness months, perhaps years earlier, when she decided to run the extra mile, swim the extra laps, or to perform just one jump more. I would argue that Michael Phelps didn't achieve greatness when he won his 18th gold medal, or when he won his first. He became great when he decided to do the things that would allow him to win. He achieved greatness the moment he chose to put the effort into his training, spending the hours in the gym and pool, and eating the foods his body needed instead of those he wanted, strengthening his mental resolve. The gold medal wins were simply the evidence of his greatness. Michael Phelps had actually achieved greatness many years earlier. Results are not the attainment of greatness, but simply confirmation of it. You become great long before the results show it. It happens in an instant, the moment you choose to do the things you need to do to be great. Let him who would enjoy a great future waste none of his present. Roger Ward Babson. What I find profound is that the difference between greatness and mediocrity on a daily and weekly basis is slim, yet the difference in results down the road is tremendous. The difference between greatness and mediocrity for a salesperson is 2 or 3 extra appointments a week, 5 or 10 more calls a day, 3 hours out of a 45-hour work week spent working on their business. For a manager or leader, it's recognizing the good work of one more person each day, delegating a task instead of doing it themselves, spending 3 hours of their week on strategic priorities, giving verbal praise and encouragement to someone who's struggling. On a daily and weekly basis, these differences seem minor, but in the long run, they are significant. Each and every one of us has the God-given ability to be great. What makes a champion is the discipline to do the extra things, even when, especially when, you don't feel like it. The encouraging news is that regardless of how you've performed in the past or how you are performing currently, you can be great beginning today simply by choosing to do the things you know you need to do. It's really no more complicated than that. In the end, you are either great in the moment or not at all. In the first chapter, I wrote about the two lives most of us have, the one we live and the one we are capable of living. Don't settle for anything less than the life you are capable of. Make a commitment to be great each day and watch what can happen in just 12 short weeks. Chapter 11. Intentional Imbalance. The 12-week year is powerful and life-changing. Although the bulk of examples we use in this audiobook address the application of the 12-week year for your business, it applies equally well in all areas of your life. One challenge most of us face is balancing our time and energy between work and family, community service and recreation, exercise and relaxation, personal passions and obligations. Too much time and effort spent in a single area can create burnout and a lack of fulfillment overall. You can start to feel as if one area of your life is draining your energy, stealing your joy, and subverting your real purpose in life. It's no wonder that so many people are seeking ways to regain balance in their lives. The challenge of work-life balance is, without question, one of the most significant struggles faced by modern man. Stephen Covey. If taken literally, the phrase life balance is something of a misnomer. It is natural to think that the goal of life balance is to spend equal time and energy in the various areas of your life. But in reality, that's not practical, and it would not necessarily create the life you desire. Trying to spend equal time in each area is unproductive and often frustrating. Life balance is not about equal time in each area. Life balance is more about intentional imbalance. Life balance is achieved when you are purposeful about how and where you spend your time, energy, and effort. At different times in your life, you will choose to focus on one area over another, and that's perfectly fine, provided it's intentional. Life has different seasons, each with its own set of challenges and blessings. There's no such thing as work-life balance. There are work-life choices, and you make them, and they have consequences. Jack Welch. The 12-week year is a terrific process to help you live a life of intentional imbalance. Many of our clients use the 12-week year to focus on a few key areas in their lives and gain new ground. Think about what could be different for you if every 12 weeks you focused on a few key areas in your life and made significant improvement. Think about your health and fitness. What might be different if for the next 12 weeks you made a commitment to improve in this area? One option is to set out a 12-week goal in this area and build a 12-week plan. In this scenario, you would identify a handful of tactics that you would execute on a daily and weekly basis over the next 12 weeks. Your plan may include tactics like these. Do 20 minutes of cardio 3 times a week. Train with weights 3 times a week. Drink at least 6 glasses of water each day. Limit calorie intake to 1,200 daily. The other option is to, again, set a 12-week goal, but rather than building a tactical plan, you identify a keystone or core action and commit to completing it for the next 12 weeks. In certain instances, a full plan works best, while in others, a keystone commitment is most productive. What about your relationships, your spouse or significant other, family, and close friends? You can use the 12-week year to build better relationships or create more romance or intimacy with your mate. How might those relationships be different if you committed yourself to making real progress over the next 12 weeks? This can be as simple as making an action commitment, like having one date night or family night a week, and following through for the next 12 weeks. It truly is incredible what you can accomplish in just 12 weeks when you commit to a specific action. Consider other areas like your spiritual, financial, emotional, intellectual, or community life. Maybe it's time to get out of debt or finish that degree you put on hold. Perhaps you've been thinking about writing a book, starting a foundation, or learning a new language. You might not be able to complete goals like these in 12 weeks, but you can sure make significant progress. Breaking your bigger goals into 12-week segments allows you not only to make consistent progress, but also to celebrate the milestones along the way. When you are making real progress, you feel greater satisfaction, feel more fulfilled, and stay motivated to see the project through to completion. To decide what to focus on, start with your vision, then rate yourself in the 7 areas of life balance, that is, spiritual, spouse, partner, family, community, physical, personal, and business. I like to use a scale from 1 to 10 to rate my level of satisfaction. A score of 10 is the best I can be in an area. In other words, 10 is great by my definition. Conversely, a score of 1 would be terrible by my definition. Notice that I am using my definition of success and satisfaction as the basis for my assessment. If you are single, for example, and you are happy with that, you might score yourself a 10 under the key relationship category. Each of these areas is either a source of energy or a drain of it. Think about it. If your work life is stressful, full of uncertainty and unfulfilling, it is bound to affect your personal life. However, if your career provides you a nice income and you enjoy what you do, that creates energy and momentum across the other areas and will have a positive effect. The 12-week year has the power to increase your income and material wealth 2, 3, or even 4-fold. It also has the power to help you experience the same magnitude of improvement in any area you choose. Apply the 12-week year to all areas of your life and be prepared for some amazing things to happen. Be encouraged. Part 2. Putting it all together. Part 2 provides additional insights and captures more than a decade of learning about what it takes to apply consistently the fundamentals of execution. We provide proven tools, templates, and tips to help you apply the 12-week year in a powerful way and achieve your goals. A year from now, you'll wish you had started today. Chapter 12, The Execution System. The 12-week year is an execution system that helps you operate at your best each day by creating clarity and focus on what matters most and a sense of urgency to do it now. As a result, more of the important stuff gets done day in and day out. A few days or weeks of that is no big deal, but when you put together day after day after day, week after week after week, the result is like compound interest, and in just 12 weeks you can be in a very different position, both personally and professionally. You may have noticed as you listened to the first section of this audiobook that in addition to restructuring your year into 12 weeks, there are a number of fundamental elements that we have discussed as well. In fact, there are 8 elements that we believe are fundamental to high performance in any endeavor. Those 8 elements are vision, planning, process control, measurement, time use, accountability, commitment, and greatness in the moment. In this section, we've organized these elements into a set of 3 principles and 5 disciplines. We have found that organizing them in this way will help you better understand how they operate as a holistic system, making it easier for you to apply them consistently. One of the challenges with these disciplines and principles is that most people know what they are, but knowing and doing are 2 very different things. As you learn to leverage these more effectively in your business and personal life, you will be amazed at what you can accomplish and how quickly you can do it. Three principles. The 12-week year builds on a foundation of three principles that in the end determine an individual's effectiveness and success. These principles are 1. Accountability. 2. Commitment. 3. Greatness in the moment. Let's take a closer look at each one. Accountability. Accountability is ultimately ownership. It is a character trait, a life stance, a willingness to own actions and results, regardless of the circumstances. The very nature of accountability rests on the understanding that each and every one of us has freedom of choice. It is this freedom of choice that is the foundation of accountability. The ultimate aim of accountability is to continually ask oneself, what more can I do to get the result? Commitment. Commitment is a personal promise that you make to yourself. Keeping your promises to others builds strong relationships, and keeping promises to yourself builds character, esteem, and success. Commitment and accountability go hand in glove. In a sense, commitment is accountability projected into the future. It is ownership of a future action or result. Building your commitment capacity has a dramatic effect on your personal and business results. The 12-week year helps you build the capacity to follow through on critical commitments and achieve breakthrough results in all areas. Greatness in the moment. As I wrote in Chapter 10, greatness is not achieved when a great result is reached, but long before that, when an individual makes the choice to do what is necessary to become great. The results are not the attainment of greatness, but simply confirmation of it. You become great long before the results show it. It happens in an instant, the moment you choose to do the things you need to do to be great, and each moment that you continue to choose to do those things. These three principles, accountability, commitment, and greatness in the moment, form the foundation of personal and professional success. 5 disciplines. The 12-week year tackles both the way you think and the actions you take. At the action level, it concentrates on building capacity within a set of success disciplines that are required for effective execution. We have found that top performers, whether athletes or business professionals, are great not because their ideas are better, but because their execution disciplines are better. These 5 disciplines are 1. Vision. 2. Planning. 3. Process control. 4. Measurement. 5. Time use. The 12-week year will help you apply these disciplines in a way that leverages your knowledge and skills and fosters consistent action. Vision. A compelling vision creates a clear picture of the future. It is critical that your business vision aligns with and enables your personal vision. This alignment ensures a powerful emotional connection that promotes a sustained commitment and continual action. Planning. An effective plan clarifies and focuses on the top priority initiatives and actions needed to achieve the vision. A good plan is constructed in a manner that facilitates effective implementation. Process control. Process control consists of a set of tools and events that align your daily actions with the critical actions in your plan. These tools and events ensure that more of your time is spent on strategic and money-making activities. Measurement. Measurement drives the process. It is the anchor of reality. Effective measurement combines both lead and lag indicators that provide comprehensive feedback necessary for informed decision-making. Time use. Everything happens in the context of time. If you are not in control of your time, then you are not in control of your results. Using your time with clear intention is a must. It's important that you see the interconnectedness of these five disciplines. If you don't have a clear, compelling vision, then the other disciplines really don't matter because you are not living a life by design, but by chance. If you have a vision but no plan, then you have a pipe dream. If you have a vision and a focused plan but lack process control, then you'll have a lot of frustration because some days you will execute and make progress and some days you won't. If you have those disciplines in place but lack the courage to keep score, then there's no way for you to know what's working and what isn't. There is no way for you to make game time adjustments that can accelerate your success. Finally, if all of those are in place, but you are not intentional about what you say yes to and what you say no to, then the day is controlling you. The emotional cycle of change. To apply the 12-week year will require change, and change is uncomfortable. It's helpful to understand the process we go through emotionally when faced with change so we won't be derailed by it. Whenever we decide to make a change in our lives, we experience an emotional roller coaster. Psychologists Don Kelly and Daryl Connor described this phenomenon in a paper called The Emotional Cycle of Change. Kelly and Connor's Emotional Cycle of Change, ECOC, includes five stages of emotional experience, which we will explore here with slight modifications based on our experience. Regardless of the change you choose to make, you will experience this cycle. You can plot new relationships, new purchases, new jobs, and new neighborhoods on the ECOC, and it's always the same. Sometimes the highs are higher, and sometimes the lows are lower. Sometimes the cycle is shorter, and other times it's longer. But in all cases, you will experience this cycle when you decide to make a change in your life. There are five stages that people move through emotionally when changing their behavior. 1. Uninformed optimism. 2. Informed pessimism. 3. Valley of despair. 4. Informed optimism. 5. Success and fulfillment. The first stage of change is often most exciting, as we imagine all of the benefits and have not yet experienced any of the costs. Our emotions are driven by our uninformed optimism, which is in the positive emotional area. You see all of the benefits of the change and none of the downside, so this stage is fun. You are brainstorming ideas and strategizing how you might create the new level of results that you desire. Unfortunately, uninformed optimism doesn't last long. As you learn more about the reality of what it takes to change, positive emotions can quickly sour. The second stage of change, informed pessimism, is characterized by a shift to a negative emotional state. At this point, the benefits don't seem as real, important, or immediate, and the costs of the change are apparent. You start to question if the change is really worth the effort and begin to look for reasons to abandon the effort. If that's not bad enough, things get worse. I call the third stage the Valley of Despair. This is when most people give up. All of the pain of change is felt, and the benefits seem far away or less important, and there is a fast, easy way to end the discomfort, going back to the way you used to do things. After all, you rationalize that it wasn't so bad before. If you quit on change when you were in the Valley of Despair, you go back to the first stage, uninformed optimism, which is a whole lot more fun than being in the valley. It is precisely at this stage, the Valley of Despair, that having a compelling vision is critical. Nearly all of us have had times in our lives when we wanted something so badly we were willing to pay any price and overcome any hurdle to get it. Maybe it was your first car. Maybe it was getting into that college you always dreamed of attending. Maybe it was pursuing the person whom you wanted to marry. Maybe it was your dream job. Whatever it was, you wanted it so badly that you willingly paid the price of your own comfort to get it. Wanting passionately to reach your vision combined with commitment and the tools and events of process control, is the way through the valley to the next stage of change. The fourth stage is informed optimism. At this stage, your likelihood of success is much higher. You are back in the positive emotional area of the cycle. The benefits of your actions are starting to bear fruit, and the costs of change are lessened because your new thoughts and actions are becoming more routine. The key at this stage is not to stop. Success and fulfillment is the final stage of the ECOC. At this final stage of change, the benefits of your new behaviors are fully experienced, and the costs of change are virtually gone. The actions, which at the beginning were difficult and uncomfortable, have now become routine. Every time you complete the cycle, you build not only your capacity, but also your confidence. At this point, you can move on to the next change that you want to implement with greater assurance of success. The ECOC is the description of the emotional impact of change. By being aware of this cycle, you are less likely to be derailed by negative emotions and are able to manage change more effectively. Closed system. The 12-week year is a closed system in that it contains everything you need to succeed. In our 2-day workshop, we have the participants list everything it takes to excel. Then, we list all of those items on a flip chart. Typically, there are more than 20, and the list fills 1 to 2 large sheets of paper. When we go through each item, every one of them is represented in these disciplines and principles. That is why if you apply the 12-week year fully as a complete system, you can't help but improve. The challenge is that not everyone applies it as a system. Often, people will apply some of the elements and not apply others. Like any system, the whole is exponentially greater than the sum of the parts. Apply and leverage any one of the disciplines or principles and you will gain from it. But the real breakthrough comes when all of them are applied in their entirety. When applied in this way, the 12-week year becomes a self-correcting system that creates a breadcrumb trail that allows you to pinpoint any breakdowns and take corrective action on a timely basis. It is a deliberate practice system that is designed for continuous improvement. In addition to being a closed system, the 12-week year also facilitates change. When you install the 12-week year as your operating system, it makes subsequent change easier. Let's use a computer as an analogy. You can have the best software money can buy, but if your operating system is not working, those programs are worthless. We've all experienced this from time to time when the printer won't print, the document won't open, or your computer is frozen. When you install the 12-week year as your operating system, it leverages your other business systems. For instance, most companies have systems for marketing, sales, products, service, technology, and other business processes. Without a system for execution, we tend to hang on to our existing systems because that is what is familiar and predictable, especially when we are faced with change. When the 12-week year is your operating system, it supports all your other business systems. So when change comes, and it will, you do not experience a massive upheaval. Instead, you can easily incorporate new systems like plug-and-play software. People need stability. We need some things to remain the same. The 12-week year as an operating system stays the same. It provides a consistent platform to implement corporate initiatives and change efforts without the chaos that usually accompanies change. For an individual, it functions as the daily foundation that doesn't change. The 12-week year is not one more thing you do. It is how you get things done. In the following chapters, we will take a deep dive into the disciplines and principles of the 12-week year. We will provide you with even greater insight, as well as tools and exercises you can use effectively to apply and leverage these fundamentals to achieve more in 12 weeks than most do in 12 months. Chapter 13. Establish Your Vision. The first step to creating breakthrough with the 12-week year is to craft a great vision for yourself. This should be a fun and inspiring exercise.